Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter and a commodity broker here at StoneX. We work with hedgers and speculators, producers and consumers, do grains and oil seed, dairy and energy. We also, for our commercial clients and producers, we also offer consulting services, futures and options. For anyone who's an account with us, and we also offer OTC and structured products. If you'd like to know more about what it's like working with me in any of those markets or products, please give me a call, 312-706-7610, or email craig.turner@stonex.com. You can also find my newsletter at turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com. I'm going to start adding some links into the newsletter and the podcast and my Twitter feed on that too. And finally, if you like the podcast, one, thanks for listening. Two, please feel free to recommend it. And it's how people find us. And if you can go over to iTunes and give us a positive review, you always appreciate that too. So let's get into it here. Just I've been traveling a little bit. I do go to shows, whether sometimes they're farmer shows, sometimes it's food and beverage industry, sometimes it's feed or fats and oils. Recently, it has been more on the food and beverage side. It has been interesting just to, I think, a lot of companies have been kind of buying hand to mouth. I mean, this is all over the industry, and this is just people I talk to at shows that I've never met before, and, some of these companies, and you'd be surprised. Like, there's a lot of, a lot of companies that were hedged maybe a couple of years ago, pretty far out, but because prices have been high for the past year or two, there just haven't been a whole lot of opportunities here. And there's been a lot of, short-term buying and waiting for commodity prices to eventually come down, which is usually the play. Like, usually commodity prices, when you get the big spike after about a year and a half or 2 years, everything reverts back to the mean, because either you get more production or demand comes down, or if it's the ag markets, all the acres come out. And if it's livestock market, it takes 6 months to, 6 to 9 months to replace the hog herd and 2 years for cattle. But so there's this natural 6 to 2 year cycle. And we're coming into year two here. And it's interesting. We're still having issues around the world. I think the Black Sea is going to keep the wheat market up here for a while, because that just isn't a straight kind of supply and demand, or really a supply side. We just need another good crop. Like, there's bigger issues going on in the Black Sea that can last longer. But, moral of the story is we have elevated prices here. I do think we'll leak lower, especially in the oil seeds, and we'll get to that. But, just to kick off the podcast here, general feeling among more of the end user side is still waiting for a break here. And we're still going hand to mouth. And that's kind of just based on my travels coming around. And on the farmer side, it's been more of, I've definitely seen some more selling here. Writing's on the wall for, I think, a lot of these commodities here going forward. But let's jump into the macro markets first, and then we'll get back to our recommendations in the ag market for the consumer and the producer side. The big story too, so there's two things going on in the macro world. Number one is the U.S. dollar has been going higher. Central banks have been raising interest rates. The number one, enemy number one right now, the central banks, is inflation, especially the United States, Canada, Bank of England, seeing Australia raise rates. And thing is, now we're actually starting to see the effects of these interest rate hikes. It is starting to slow growth in the economy. You are seeing it some issues in the financial markets. There were some things going on with British pension funds and, how they have their investment structured around their 10-year bonds. And, Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank, mostly Credit Suisse has been in the news. We're not going to recap all of that here, but, there are financial stresses to the system. So that's number one. Number two, because there is an expectation that inflation, the rate of inflation will start to decrease. We may still have inflation too high in, for what the central banker, and quite honestly, everyone wants, no one wants to see 5 or 6% inflation, but compared to the 8s and 9s we've been posting lately, it'd be a step in the right direction to actually see a 6% inflation in the next CPI report. The idea is, if we can start seeing inflation come down, the Fed is not going to reverse course, but instead of going 75 basis points with the next meeting, maybe they go 25 or 50. Maybe they take a more gradual path to get to 4% on the overnight rate at the Federal Reserve and similar, targets for Canada and Europe and Britain as we go forward. And that may allow the stock market, the energy markets, commodity markets, rates and bonds to kind of stabilize a little bit because we have been going pretty fast here. So since then, we've seen the dollar back off after being on a huge tear. We've seen a little back and forth in the commodities too. Same thing with the 30-year mortgage rate. And, now it's, I think, going to be a little bit of a wait and see, what will the October monthly economic reports bring? Will we see, what happens with employment? What happens with the inflation? Is it starting to taper? And how that plays out. So that's kind of the overarching big macro theme of what's going on right now. Now, there is still a concern about demand. I think what the market's really trying to figure out is we have a soft landing or a hard crash. And obviously everyone's hoping for a soft landing, and maybe that is what we get. But either way, demand will be down in some way, shape, or form on these markets. When it comes to the agriculture side, it's usually demand that gets hurt is usually whatever's associated with energy, because we do use less energy as the economy slows and even goes into recession. That would hurt the whole biofuel side of the demand equation, whether it be renewable biodiesel or ethanol, and then also the higher cost proteins. So we wouldn't see as much feed maybe go to animal protein markets, just because of the real estate demand for, because prices are so high. I mean, if you've seen some of the prices for steak and particularly beef, but everything's gone up some, on the even chicken and pork and seafood. So there is an inflation there. And, people do cut back. They don't buy as much as they did before. And that affects the feed demand and the production demand too. So those things happen. That's natural. And the big question is, how much does that eventually impact the markets? Also, we are in harvest here, and that's going to have some pressures too. We'll get into the ag market in a second. I just want to touch on energy real quick. OPEC came out and said they're going to cut 2 million barrels of production a day from their quota limits. They already been going 1 million under the quota anyways, because the way the quota limit works with OPEC is you can go up to that amount, but not over it. But if you want to, you can produce under it. And a lot of times the OPEC countries will go right to the limit. But if, market prices are coming down and, they don't like the price, they may ease up on their own and not feel the need to kind of flood the market. So, they're saying 2 million barrels per day, but they are already underneath that quota. Some countries are already taking the step of doing that. So anyways, what it does seem like, though, is crude. When OPEC made this decision to cut production, we were under $80 and we were going into the 70s. And there was concern that if the momentum kept on happening, the ceiling kept on happening, you'll go below 70. OPEC doesn't want to see that. They're getting together. They start talking about production cuts. And here we are in the mid 80s again. Personally, I think OPEC wants crude to be above $80. When it breaks that level into the 70s, they're going to start to defend that price, and in their mind, they probably want to see crude between 80 and 120, right? They don't, that's most likely what they want. And honestly, compared to 10 years ago when we had the shale revolution going on here in the United States, there's not a whole lot of activity going on to get fossil fuels. So they can probably let crude be 120 because you're not going to get as much competition from alternatives at the moment. So that's an interesting, development here. You got the whole thing going on in Europe, between Russia and the available, natural gas. That's its own animal. Because we can have a situation here in the United States where natural gas could actually come down over the next year and Europe can still remain fairly high. And that has everything to do with the bottleneck of what is realistic that the United States can export. There's only just so much liquid natural gas we can get out of this country at a certain point. That's just the reality of it all. So on the energy side, if I'm a consumer of energy, which most people on listening to this podcast are on the consumer side, not on the producer side, I'd start looking into June. This may be a bottom for crude. It's just going to depend if we have that soft landing or hard landing. If we have that hard crash to the economy, then maybe crude does go lower. But the administration's pretty much out of options. They can't do much more with the SPR. OPEC now has more pricing control than I can remember, just because there's less developed nations now producing fossil fuels. So OPEC has really gotten into the driver's seat here, along with Russia. They've expanded their cartel and producing nations. And meanwhile, basically Western Europe, or let's just call it NATO and, the United States and Canada, especially the United States, have kind of decreased on that as they've switched over to renewables. So there's not a whole lot you can do right now in the short term about these energy prices. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens here in the next, I would say in the next probably 1 to 2 months, if any policies change on the outlook of fossil fuels, even if it's temporary. But that will most likely play out in the next month to 2 months. In the meantime, I like June crude. I've said that before. It's tough to ride down. I know I don't like riding down a market like this, but now that we're in the around $80 in June, I would think, in the next 8 months, we would start to see the economy, the Fed stop raising rates probably sometime in early 2003. The market will eventually price in the worst of all of this. And, as we come into the spring and summer, I would hope that not only would the economy be picking up, but also energy demand be picking up. And also, it's not like we're creating any more supply here. If anything, OPEC clearly at this point, it's also with the world depleting their reserves, like the United States is, when you get into the longer term solutions, it gets a little bit more dicey. Where is all this excess crude and energy going to come from if we're not doing exploration and using the oil and gas industry to get there? We're just not there yet on the alternatives. So I like the Junes. I would be looking at calls and call spreads for June crude oil. I have no problem selling put spreads. I don't want to sell a naked put. You never know when you get the next disaster out of left field. But I got no problem selling put spreads in June to help finance any kind of calls or call spreads for June. Whether that be a spec play or whether that be you're a consumer of energy and you want some protection to the upside. I like it either way. So collars or some kind of strategy like that. Happy to talk about that. Give me a call. I've got a couple ideas just depending on what you need to do or what the objective is. Number two, let's wrap this up with grains and oil seeds. Here's the thing. Canola and soybeans are kind of leading the market down. I'm not surprised. Soybeans are probably more bearish than canola, but regardless, there's no more supply issue with palm oil. All right, palm is the largest vegetable oil in the world. Palm and soybeans are known as the majors because you combine those two, that's over 50% of all oils. I want to say it's like 60. It's way up there. And then, all the other oils make up for maybe 30 to 40%. And then, canola and European rapeseed, which are basically the same thing for the most part, and sunflower are about like 20 to 25%. And those are the minor oils. And then everything else is this small stuff like peanut oil and avocado oil and corn oil and whatever it may be. But, so the biggest one doesn't have a supply issue anymore. And now the second biggest one is soybean oil. And we're transitioning from a tight to an adequate market. And we could even be burdensome this time next year. And what I mean by that is, you know, soybeans are now at a stock to usage of around 5%. If we get this big South American crop and it actually lessens the need of exports coming out of the United States, we could get back to 400 million on carryout or higher and be close to a 10% stock to usage. And just depending on how the acres shake out for new crop soybeans next year, you know, all of a sudden we can be above 10% stock to usage, which would be like a 500 million carryout. And now you're not tight anymore in the soybean market. Not saying there won't be good demand. And I also don't think we're going $8 either, even if we get above 10% stock to usage. I would think maybe, you know, if we can just go from being tight to adequately supplied, we're probably somewhere at 12 or lower during the year. And then if we do start to get to 10% stock to usage, you maybe we're making a run at 10. That takes a year, and we're in the 13s right now to do that. And same thing with canola. You know, on the board, I want to say we're around 850 a ton. You know, the risk is you go below 700. You know, we're in the 600 to 700 range, depending how this year's crop, you know, comes out and how much oil seed is around the world. That would be my concern. So if I'm a buyer of soybean oil and soybeans, I'm probably still letting that come in, looking to see how harvest pressure does, and also keeping one eye on South America to make sure there aren't, you know, and particularly Brazil, make sure there aren't production issues. If I'm a farmer, I think I'm getting aggressive here because there's no carry in the market, getting aggressive here and making sales. And I'm also probably looking into buying puts or put spreads, or actually probably selling a call spread and buying a put in November 23 soybeans, just in case we're $2 or $3 lower next year. That's, you know, probably making a little bit of forward sales if I can, depending on the basis and what's available in your local area. Probably do buying a put, selling a call spread on the producer side. If I'm a consumer, letting it come in. It's just that palm oil supply has solved itself. Soybeans are next, just as long as there's not another drought. And we've had 2 years of issues in South America. To get a third would be, you know, historically speaking, highly unlikely. And right now, Brazil has good soil moisture. It's got off to an early start in planting, which almost always helps yields. And the weather is looking pretty good for Brazil. Argentina, still dry, but there's time. But Brazil looks pretty good. So that, and also Brazil is the one that exports. A lot of the grain stays home in Argentina, where they process it for, you know, meal and oil. So it's a little bit different in Argentina. Brazil is really the main one to keep focused on, because they'll be more of an important part on the global export market. On the canola side, you know, we had such a shortage last year. We had a price ration 6 to 7 million metric tons of canola in Canada. And, you know, regardless if we have an 18 million metric ton crop in canola this year, which I think is worst case scenario, 19.5 to 20 is best case scenario. Based on the conversations I've had with farmers for the past couple of weeks in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta, my guess is we're going to be closer to that 18, 18 and a half, maybe 19 million metric tons, as opposed to 19 and a half or 20 million metric tons. The yield's just been so variable, and there's been, you know, just not as good as maybe everyone was hoping at first. That's just my gut feeling here on that. But, you know, we do talk to a lot of farmers here in, you know, in North America, primarily United States, in the Midwest and Canada, in Western Canada. And it just sounds like spring wheat comes in probably as expected when it's all said and done. Canola might be just a little bit disappointing overall. So maybe you do have to price ration 1 to 2 million metric tons of exports, which is better than 6 or 7 million tons of exports. So I think, you know, soybeans leads the market lower. But canola doesn't need to be 1,000 or 1,100 or 1,200. It could be 700 or 800. It could be like in a price per bushel. It doesn't need to be $20. It doesn't need to be, you know, $20 a bushel. It could be 17, 18, you know, 16 per bushel. and ration enough demand, you know, to get by. I think that's what we're seeing. And the risk, again, is the downside. So if I'm a consumer of canola, I'm probably getting a little bit more aggressive than I would be with soybean oil to start locking in, because we could be a little bit tighter again this year. But you can also, you know, and if I'm a farmer, some of these prices for 2023 look pretty good. And I'll say this with canola. If we plant another 20 million acres next year and have anywhere close to a trend line yield, we go from tight stocks to not even adequate, maybe even burdensome. And we're going back to prices, you know, pre-COVID. And with a little caveat on that, no one knows where the new lows are going to be, right? How much will the inflation, you know, over the past, let's say inflation finally stops 6 months or a year from now, you know, and it's below, let's say it's back to that 2 or 3% target, right? So we would have had like 2 years of some pretty constant inflation numbers over what we were used to. So what do those new lows look like in canola and in soybeans? You know, do we got to add 10, 15, 20%, you know, to prices? That's what happened in the 70s, or even more. So that'll be interesting to see too. Like maybe the new lows in canola really aren't 400 and 500. Maybe it's this 500 to 600 range. You know, the lows for soybeans may not be $8 anymore. It could be some, you know, it could be somewhere above 9. You know, corn, you know, the days of when we had a 2.2 billion carryout and harvest lows were like 325 or 330 on the board. Those days may be over. Now, I'm not saying like $5 is a new low, but could it be in the high threes or low fours? It certainly can. We're just not going to know until we get to a situation where we're over a 2 billion carryout, like a 15% stock to usage, which will happen one day. Maybe not this year, could be next year. It'll definitely happen in the next couple of years. And just getting to that then, to kind of wrap this all up, the way we see the market right now is, given just average acres and somewhere around an average yield, the oil seed market, the major oil seed markets, which is palm and soybeans, don't have tightness in them come this spring, because that Brazil crop would be like 104, 105 million acres. There's a trend line yield basically solves all tightness in the major oil seed market. And then and then 6 months later, when we have the North American harvest, canola and rapeseed, that problem's solved. And then we'll just see what happens with sunflower. But sunflower is such a minor oil seed. It's not going to affect, you know, global oil seed prices that much. So that's the outlook right now for the oil seeds. Grains are different. Grains are going to be tight for at least a year. All right. There's nothing that's going to happen in South America or in South Africa or in Australia that's going to 100% completely solve how tight corn and wheat are right now. What those markets can do is kind of add a boost halfway through the marketing year, of a shot, you know, a nice little shot of new crop production to add it to the export market to help things along. Could definitely do that, you know, but what it's not going to be able to do is make up for all the tightness in corn and wheat around the world, unless two things happen. On the corn side, you know, Brazil and Argentina need to have a good crop. Brazil should have a good crop. You know, Argentina needs rain. And then the United States and is going to have to grow 90 plus million acres, have a good yield. All right. And that probably gets us to adequate stocks, which isn't great. There's still risk, you know, in that, just getting back to adequate. What gets you into a well-supplied global market is getting the Black Sea online. And that is a huge wild card. And it's why some of these grain markets are going to be so volatile. So, and it affects wheat more than it does corn. So when I look at the grain markets, you know, corn is going to have lower demand. The ethanol component's going to hurt it. The feed component's going to hurt it. So of the grain markets, corn eventually breaks first. The last one to really come down will be wheat. And it's not just going to be about production worldwide. It's going to be, just so much of the world's wheat comes out of the Black Sea, primarily Russia and Ukraine. And the demand for wheat is a little bit more inelastic, because we don't use wheat for energy, And we really don't use a ton of wheat for feed. I mean, there is feed grade wheat, but like, for example, in the United States, you know, 85% of domestic consumption is food. You know, the other 15%, like the stuff that's no good, it goes to feed for the most part. And that's just because no one would want it, you know, for human consumption. So, I mean, that's it. And that's fairly similar around the world too. So, you know, and wheat is primarily, you know, a very cheap and efficient cost of calories. So, you know, it's gonna, you know, as the world actually shifts, you know, from maybe higher protein to, you know, lower, cheaper costs of calories, you know, honestly, wheat demand for wheat and rice may even increase, you know, as the demand for animal protein decreases, just because of a cost, a cost benefit. So that's where we're looking. So I'm not a huge fan of shorting wheat. If I am a producer, I guess what you do is you try to buy some puts to set a floor, and you sell the cash on the rallies, the physical on the rallies. And then if I'm a consumer, I mean, honestly, I'm not looking for a huge break here. You know, the companies that we work with that need to buy wheat and flour, I've got no problem saying, hey, if we, you know, dip 50, 75 cents because of whatever, it's a buying opportunity right now, again, on the consumer side. And if I'm, you know, working with anyone, you know, who needs to buy wheat or flour, you know, we're putting calls up there just in case things go really south in the Black Sea. You know, knock on wood, that doesn't happen, but, you know, wheat would be the market that would shoot up and go back, you know, go back into maybe the low teens, you know, 12, 13 is possible if things get real bad again in the Black Sea. Hopefully that doesn't happen. It's going to take the longest time to solve those stocks, and it's going to take a while to get those exports up and running. But that's the biggest uncertainty. And that's why when you take a look at the wheat market, the options are just insanely expensive because, you know, it has the highest level uncertainty, and based on how things go, it can have the biggest swings either way. So if you have any questions for me, you want to talk energy, grains, oil seeds, dairy, whether from a spec side or a hedge side, if you're a producer or a consumer, please let me know. We can talk about consulting, futures and options, OTC and structured products. And my number here is 312-706-7610. Email is craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're a client, you have my cell phone. You can always call the cell or shoot me a text too. So thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great rest of your week, and I'll talk to you later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.